Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Tim Stenovek and Katie Greifeld live in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Katie, you and I were talking just a few minutes ago about this $100 incentive that Mayor Bill de Blasio is offering parents of students, I should say, 5 to 11-year-olds, Thursday at city-run sites where kids are eligible to get their shots.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're moving forward with an incentive, you know, because there's a lot of opinions on both sides about whether to vaccinate children, and it's interesting to see them taking the carrot approach.
What about the incentive about mental health? Because that's something that our next guest has a lot to talk about. Dr. Tamar Mendelsohn is director of the Center for Adolescent Health at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. The Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health is supported by Michael R. Bloomberg, founder of Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropies. Dr. Mendelsohn, it's great to have you on the program. Can you talk a little bit about the connection between mental health and where we are in the pandemic, especially among the youngest and I would say argue among the most vulnerable people in our society?
Yeah, well, hello, and thank you for having me. So clearly the pandemic has been a time of incredible stress for families, and that includes young people. We see in the data that rates of depression and anxiety and suicide have increased for young people during the COVID pandemic. So this is terrific news that we have this vaccine that's now going to be available for kids between the ages of 5 and 11, and that's around 28 million American children. So the hope now is that this vaccine can help us with more of a return to normalcy, can help reduce parent stress, and allow young people to have more in-person interactions with family and friends. And hopefully that will help everybody's mental health.
And I'm curious, you know, where do you think this has to come from? Because obviously Tim and I have been talking about the fact that New York City is offering that $100 incentive to get kids vaccinated. I mean, would you expect to see more of those types of bonuses or incentives rolled out across the country as, you know, we try to improve vaccination rates among younger people?
I think working to improve vaccine uptake for parents and, you know, sort of getting parents confident and comfortable vaccinating their children is a really, really important thing. And I think a lot of us have been bombarded on social media with all kinds of misinformation. So people are confused. They're not maybe sure that they have all the right information. And so I think it's really important for us to do the outreach, to do the work, to answer questions and bust myths. so that, you know, parents feel confident.
What's the right way to do that? Because I shared this story last week, but I'll share it again for those who weren't listening. I was at the doctor speaking to a healthcare provider last week, and we were just making small talk because I was about to get my blood drawn, which is something I just cannot stand to happen. And she was saying that she has kids who are between the ages of 5 and 11. I said, oh, you're so lucky because they'll be able to get vaccinated soon. And she told me, and this is someone who works at a hospital, oh, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to wait. What would you say to her?
So obviously it's a parent's personal decision, but all the data and all the infectious disease experts that I've interacted with have really highlighted the incredible benefits that the vaccine has to offer. And really, I'd be much more nervous as a parent not getting my child vaccinated.
And so, Dr. Mendelsohn, I want to talk more about the mental health aspect of this and child and adolescent mental health. In terms of, you know, how obviously the pandemic has taken a toll on all of us mental health wise, but, you know, particularly those young people. And I'm curious, you know, to your point that getting vaccinated, the return to normal, that could improve mental health. I mean, walk us through that link. Is that just because, you know, we'll be able to go out and socialize more?
I think it can really reduce some of the stress that is affecting families because parents may be vaccinated while children below the age of 12 are not vaccinated. And this can create some anxiety around what kind of family gatherings can we have for the holidays? You know, how can I protect my children while still living life and trying to return to normal in some way? So I definitely think the vaccination can help families have that extra confidence. I also think that the more we can return to a semblance of normalcy across the board at schools and so forth, the more that children and teenagers can kind of get back to the business of their development and focus on, you know, socializing and growing emotionally and the things that really they need to do at this age.
Dr. Mendelsohn, my son was 14 months when the pandemic hit. He's almost three now. He thinks everything is hand sanitizer and he knows how to put on a mask. And I just think to myself, this is like a pandemic baby. These are going to be his earliest memories. What are long-term thoughts on that and just in the last 30 seconds that we have?
Absolutely. There's going to be a lot of shared generational experience with this pandemic. I do think young people are incredible and resilient and, you know, they are going to be fine. But many young people have coped with serious trauma like losing a parent. So for those young people, we really do need to make sure that they have the mental health and emotional supports that they need to thrive.
Dr. Tamar Mendelsohn, Director of the Center for Adolescent Health at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Health, joining us on the phone from Baltimore. The Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, it is supported by Michael R. Bloomberg, the founder of Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropies. Katie, it's something I've been thinking about a lot, just what it looks like on the other side of this, or if this is something we're just going to continually be dealing with.
Absolutely. It almost feels like we're in purgatory.
Yeah, that's the way a lot of people think about it, I think. This is Bloomberg Radio, and this is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, it's Bloomberg's Big Take today, the very best of Bloomberg's in-depth original reporting from around the globe. It's written by Gillian Tan, senior reporter at Bloomberg News. She joins us here in the New York City Bureau. It's all about SoftBank's Masayoshi Son. He cannot pay enough to keep Vision Fund talent so happy. As the Japanese company prepares to distribute profits in December, some of its key startup investors have headed for the door. Gillian joins us now. Gillian, before we get into what exactly is happening at SoftBank's Vision Fund, can you give us an idea of how venture capitalist partners are traditionally compensated?
Yeah. So just also to just jump in, I worked on this with colleagues in Japan and London. I don't want to take it away from them. I wasn't the only author. But venture capital partners are traditionally compensated with up to 20% of carry, which is essentially a distribution of profits. So, for example, let's say way, way back in the day, if you were to invest in a company, let's say Facebook, and it went public and your fund were to make X amount, you would be entitled to roughly 20% of those profits.
And so what's different at SoftBank and how they actually compensate their employees, and why is that leading to these defections?
Yeah, so we have reported that since, I think, last March, there have been 7 managing partner exits, and the firm's sole senior managing partner is set to exit by the end of this year. One of the key reasons is they have an eccentric approach to paying carry, and what we've reported in terms of the December distribution, that's the first carry payment that any of these folks, or the folks who are left, should I say, are going to be receiving from the $100 billion Vision Fund vehicle. And if you think about it, these are names, companies that they've invested in include like DoorDash, Coupang, which is a big Korean company, Uber, Guardant Health, which is a healthcare company that's gone public, just, you know, dozens and dozens of companies that have now gone public that these guys haven't seen, guys and girls haven't seen any profits from.
I mean, there have been some misses too, though, most notably WeWork.
Yeah, WeWork and a little company called Greensill, which was a little bit of a disaster. But obviously, you know, I think it's very clear, and SoftBank reports this, the Vision Fund is in the green. It just hasn't been really compensating its senior investment staff.
Well, that's what I'm curious about, whether this has, you know, slowed SoftBank down at all, because, you know, I was saying to Tim, it feels like they have a footprint in everything. It still feels like every other week I see a headline about a new investment that they're making.
Yeah, almost daily now sometimes it feels like, honestly. But no, it hasn't slowed them down. They're now investing out of Vision Fund 2, which actually has no outside investors. One key thing, Vision Fund 1 was backed by sovereign wealth funds out of Saudi Arabia and Abu Dhabi, whereas Vision Fund 2 is purely SoftBank capital and then also Master Sons capital.
Which is one of the reasons he justifies taking a large portion of returns from that, right?
Exactly, which is also why he, you know, doesn't want to pay out of SoftBank's profits to staffers. He obviously wants to retain that for himself and also shareholders in the public company that is SoftBank.
Okay, so what do compensation experts tell you about what's happening here, and also where are these defectors going?
Yeah, so we spoke to a bunch of experts. Obviously, it's pretty clear if you don't pay enough, people aren't going to stick around. People going to various places. One managing partner is starting his own new firm. Another two went to Gore's Group, where they invest in companies and they're sort of leading a SPAC effort across there. Another has left, I think, to write a book and is just, you know, hasn't exactly said what they're up to next. And another one joined a company called Naspers, which is a big South African-based giant.
And just finally, in the last 20 seconds that we have with you, Jillian, it's not like they're not getting paid much if they're staying there, because junior and senior level salaries are high there, $500,000 to
$700,000. Yeah, I know. For regular people, like regular Americans, just like regular people around anywhere, these aren't small salaries. Cash salaries are obviously very high. It's just the carry. You know, they would be expecting tens of millions that they're just really not getting at this point.
Well, it's a great story. Jillian Tan co-wrote it with two of our colleagues around the world. It's today's Bloomberg Big Take. Check it out on the Bloomberg Terminal and, of course, at Bloomberg.com. Jillian Tan, senior reporter for Bloomberg News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently.
Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY.
Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, it's the cover of the brand new edition of Bloomberg Business Week. It's available now on newsstands and at Bloomberg.com/businessweek. The cover, Joel, is all about 23andMe. It wants to use its customers' genetic data to beat cancer. The story is by Kristen Brown. And joining us now is Joel Weber, editor at Bloomberg Business Week. He's with us in the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. Tim Annette, one of the editors on the piece, he's on the U.S. healthcare team, and he's U.S. healthcare team leader for Bloomberg News, joining us on the phone from New York City. Joel, 23andMe, a lot of people recognize the company headed by Ann Wojcicki as the company that you spit into a tube, you send it off, and you understand more about your own ancestry, your own family history. Have you done it?
I have not. And that was all, you know, the genius part of this business, as I think Kristen's story goes into, is that a lot of people did, like millions of them. And when that project started 10 plus years ago, it was just about like, hey, where'd you come from? What's in your DNA? And it seemed really, you know, innocuous, but there was a master plan all along. What was that master plan, Tim?
Go ahead, Tim Annette.
Yeah, sure. So the master plan was to become a pharmaceutical company, right? As we say in the story, Ann Wojcicki had this vision from the very beginning. She even wrote it down, and one of her investors had it framed, and they gave it to her later on. It's remarkable story of consistency in a lot of ways. You know, they sort of stuck to what their vision was, and now they are sort of in a position, now that they have all of this data from all of those people who have spit into those tubes, to move forward with it.
And so how does 23andMe actually execute that vision? How do they go from, you know, sort of a fun service, you spit in a tube, you pay, and you analyze your ancestry, to, you know, a full-blown pharmaceutical company?
Well, so it's a lot of science, right? Just like any drug company, they're going to have to go into the laboratory, and they're going to have to try a lot of things out. And as we know from pharmaceutical history, a lot of things that you take into the lab don't work out. It's a little better than 1 in 10 chance that any drug is going to get to the market from its initial conception. So 23andMe is betting that they have all this genetic data, and genetic data is very valuable because it can allow you to sort of take some shortcuts in that development process. You've got a lot of numbers you can crunch to try to find both things that you could possibly drug, right? Things that are, you know, ailments or defects that drugs could target, or you could find ways to use old drugs for new things.
I don't think, Tim, that people who did this originally over the last decade realized that what they were doing was potentially contributing to a different vision of the company. And I'm wondering what the company says about that and how they reconcile that.
Well, I think, you know, the thing that they say to people is that, you know, we're a healthcare company and we want to help you use the information that can be found in your genetic code to make you well, to make you better. And, you know, I think the other side of this is that, you know, thousands of people participate in clinical trials and everything. There are different levels of consent with these things. But, you know, they make the argument that we have this data and we can act on it and we can get things to you faster than others might be able to.
So this idea of using genetics to actually make drugs is basically untested. They're the first company that will be kind of doing this. And what's their pipeline look like, Tim?
Well, they've got a pretty good pipeline for a company that's been, you know, sort of not doing this for a terribly long time. Over the past year, they were able to sort of double the number of candidates they're working on. They've got about 18 now. And bear in mind, this is at a time when, you know, a lot of people were not working in an office. You know, their people were all spread out like many companies. And at the same time, a lot of drug companies were having trouble recruiting for clinical trials and stuff. So they've been able to sort of do a lot of this data work over the past year, even when other science has slowed down.
Go ahead, Katie.
No, Tim, you go.
It seems like, I mean, you guys write about this in the story, right? The valley of death between the idea of getting something approved versus actually developing the drug. It seems like another avenue that could happen is 23andMe gets bought by a bigger pharmaceutical company, and then that bigger pharma company can then use that data. Explain partnerships, how that's working, and how potentially some of the companies that it's partnering with could end up being competitors.
Sure. So they have a partnership with GlaxoSmithKline that is, you know, these companies are working very closely together on treatments. But, you know, in the competitive landscape of pharma, as we all know, there are lots and lots of deals that happen, you know, companies buying other companies, but also there's licensing deals, there are partnerships, there are many companies out there that remain freestanding companies but partner with rival companies on what are oftentimes their biggest selling drugs, right? So the commercial flavors of this could go in a lot of different directions for 23andMe. I mean, 23andMe is still a relatively small company in the pharma universe, right? They're like a $5 billion company right now. You know, a lot of the biggest companies in the space are, you know, 100 billion plus in market cap. So, you know, they're a minnow for sure, and they're going to need help. But they're getting it from companies like Glaxo that do have mass and do have commercial know-how and production know-how and all of those things that, you know, younger drug companies really need when they're starting.
And so still a small fish, 23andMe, but I'm curious, I mean, are there any other companies trying to do what they're trying to do, and do they have the same huge database that 23andMe has?
I mean, the company that has the most similar database is Ancestry, right? But they're not really doing this. There are lots of other companies out there that are using genetic therapies for different therapeutic purposes, right? Like you've got Moderna, for example, that its RNA technology is behind the COVID-19 vaccine. There are also companies out there doing things with gene editing, with CRISPR. There's a really interesting technology called RNA interference that a company called Alnylam is very big in. So there are a lot of different kinds of sort of genetic technologies out there that companies are trying out.
So, by the way, this Minnow was a startup, a spit tube startup. Now it's a publicly traded company. It went public via SPAC earlier this year. What did the market think about this company?
And Tim, we only have about 30 seconds.
I mean, they've done pretty well so far, right? They've grown since they did the SPAC deal. And
they're profitable.
You know, they're profitable. I mean, they have a big commercial business, right? It has like Super Bowl ads and stuff. So that's the thing a lot of drug companies don't have, is just some recognition.
Well, it's a great story. It's written by Christian V. Brown. It's the cover of the new issue of Bloomberg Businessweek magazine. It's available now on newsstands and at Bloomberg.com/businessweek. A big thank you to Tim Annette, U.S. healthcare team leader for Bloomberg News. He joined us on the phone from New York City. Also joining us in the flesh here in the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, Joel Weber, editor at Bloomberg Businessweek. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio, and this is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
So on Tuesday, Zillow stock tumbled after it stunned the real estate industry when it said it was shutting down its home flipping business after racking up losses. Katie, it had me thinking a lot about what that says about Zillow's model. Also, if it says anything about what's happening with residential real estate around the country. So a great time for us to check in With somebody who probably knows more about residential real estate than almost anyone we talk to, Dallas Tanner, the president and CEO of Invitation Homes. It has more than 80,000 homes. It's the largest owner of single-family rental homes in the U.S. right now. Dallas joins us on the phone from Dallas, Texas. Dallas, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. Well, let's start with what happened with Zillow and perhaps how the Invitation Homes model is different. But what was your reaction when you saw that news from Zillow earlier this week?
You know, candidly, I was surprised, given the fact that the iBuyer space has continued to get more and more robust over time. You know, some of their competitors, I think, have done a really nice job managing inventory and the like. Now, with that being said, I couldn't tell you. We don't know all the details as to what happened. And Zillow has a pretty diverse business, right, in terms of some of the other services that they offer. So my guess is strategically, internally, they're probably looking at, you know, where their strengths and weaknesses were and ultimately made the call that they did. But with that being said, the housing market, its fundamentals, you know, the supply chain right now, the imbalance of supply that we have, quite frankly, relative to demand, are all lending itself to, you know, a market that feels really strong. And I think they said as much even in their earnings call.
So you didn't see the Zillow news and your, according to your own metrics and internal metrics that you see, as any sort of canary in the coal mine about the housing market in the U.S.?
No, not for us. I mean, you got to think about the volume. I don't know their exact numbers in terms of how many of the homes they had on balance sheet. I'm sure it was somewhere between 10 and 12,000 or something like that. But that's such a small percentage of the 6.5 million resales that we see every year in U.S. single families. So no, I wouldn't look at it as a barometer of something that's going on in the marketplace. In fact, I kind of think the opposite. If you look at, you know, some of their competitors, if you look at our business, if you look at anyone really in single family, if you're a home builder or a SFR operator like we are, we're having record occupancy, 98% occupancy, record revenue growth because rents are so in demand right now in terms of having that flexibility of lease. And so we're actually seeing the opposite in our business.
And Dallas, the company said that back in February that it planned to spend at least $1 billion buying properties this year. And you touched on it, that just if you look at the housing market, the supply of homes, it feels like it's really dwindled and the housing market has just been on fire. So in terms of spending that $1 billion, has that been difficult to even find houses to buy?
In terms for our business?
Yeah.
Invitation Homes? You know, it's been interesting. We actually updated guidance this last quarter. We're going to be somewhere between $1.7 billion and $1.8 billion mm-hmm. this year in terms of new acquisitions. So we've actually outperformed what was our initial, you know, kind of targets. Now, with that being said, yes, the market has some supply challenges. There's no doubt about it. Although we are seeing supply creep back into the resale market at a little bit better clip than we've seen historically. With that being said, it's still at an all-time low. You have interest rates that are still, I think I saw today, the 30-year is at just north of 3%. That's still really cheap money, cheap availability of finance for those that can qualify for mortgage. So it's actually, I think, keeping the supply pretty tight because home buyers, again, those 6.5 million resales we talked about, those are still going, you know, 98% of those to end users would be my guess at the end of the day. So we pick our spots. We're very deliberate about where we invest capital and why. We have partners with a number of different home builders. We're helping bring new supply to the marketplace. So we've definitely kind of had to, you know, be deliberate and really anchor in on our different channels for acquiring product. But we've been able to do it, albeit it is a tough environment and we have to be, you know, consistent in terms of our approach.
Dallas, is there a time or a price where you see homes in the United States on a whole becoming so expensive that you're no longer in an acquiring mode?
Well, there's always cycles, right? So you could certainly see at some point there could be a cycle where homes get too pricey based on your investment criteria of where you want to invest capital and why. Doesn't feel like that right now. We can still buy homes at a really attractive, you know, what we view as our own cost of capital relative to the types of yields and things that we can find in the marketplace. Now, will that last forever? Time will tell. Trees don't typically grow to the sky. But I think the difference in our business, and it's very different from an iBuyer or from somebody else, is that, you know, our customer stays with us for 3+ years right now.
Wow.
They renew 2 or 3 times their lease with our business, and they actually love the service. They want to renew because they like the flexibility of a lease. Totally different than a home flipper or somebody that's just in and out of a marketplace mm-hmm. really quickly. That's not our model. We're long-term investors. we're making decisions for 5, 10, 15 year horizons, and we want to make sure that we're offering a product that's sustainable. So the approach of the different business models are very different.
And so, Dallas, we have just about 30 seconds left, but you do have a big footprint in the Western United States, you know, Texas, Florida. Do you have any plans to expand outside of that?
Great question. Yes, 95% of our revenue comes out of the West Coast and parts of the Sun Belt. We love markets like Austin, you know, Salt Lake City, Nashville, that we don't currently have footprints in, that could be potential, you know, markets for us to expand into over time. We'd have to have a really good entry point and find a way to get the scale that's meaningful for the way that we like to operate our business.
Dallas Tanner, you've got to come back and spend some more time with us. A great conversation. President and CEO at Invitation Homes. The stock, by the way, Katie, has been on a tear this year, higher by more than 37%. Dallas Tanner joining us via Zoom from Dallas, Texas. This is Bloomberg Radio. You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY.
Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm driving in my car.
Hey, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no. This is not a toy.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Yes, indeed. Under 10 minutes away from the market close on this Thursday, November 4th, looking like we're headed for another record on the S&P 500, higher by 0.3% right now. Let's drive to the close with Eddie Perkin, Chief Equity Investment Officer for Equity at Eaton Vance, joining us on the phone from Boston. Eddie, how are you?
Good to be with you, Tim.
Hey, help us make sense of what exactly is happening in the markets right now. It sort of seems like, based on what we saw yesterday in the bond market and the equity market, while Fed Chair Powell was speaking, while that release came out, that everything was kind of perfectly communicated by the Fed.
Yeah, you know, I do my best lateral thinking when I'm exercising, and I was in the gym yesterday thinking about Matilda. Matilda is the Roald Dahl book from 1988, made into a movie by Danny DeVito in 96, and the girl, the title character in that, has telekinetic powers, and she can control objects, and I just thought this is what the Fed's trying to do with the economy. They have this Matilda envy where they're trying to control every element of what's going on. It's such a complex, adaptive system, the economy, that I think there's a level of hubris there that's concerning. And I think investors have a form of Stockholm syndrome where they're happy to be fed this very explicit direction of how the economy is going to go from Chairman Powell and the Fed. And I worry about that a little bit because I don't think you can control something like the economy with that level of precision.
Well, Eddie, one message that Chair Powell really is trying to control is that he's really trying to separate the tapering timeline from the rate hike schedule. That, okay, pretty quick taper planned of their bond purchase program. He's trying to drive home the point that that doesn't imply any sort of timeline for their rate hike schedule. Do you believe him, and does the market believe him?
I don't believe him, and the market definitely does not believe him. I mean, you look at the futures curve for Fed funds futures, and it's between 2 and 3 rate hikes in 2022. Given where inflation is running right now, it's hard to imagine they'll be able to taper without raising rates. Goldman was out with a call earlier in the week that they think there'll be 2 rate hikes in 2022. I mean, it could end up being more than that. It was people like Bill Dudley, former New York head of the New York Fed, who said that once they do start raising rates, it'll have to, if you wait longer than you should, then you're going to have to raise rates by more than you originally intended. So I do think rate hikes are coming, and I think the equity market probably won't take that well. I mean, like we said a moment ago, the equity market investors, I think, are happy to be spoon-fed this talk from the Fed, but once rates start going up, that's usually not good for equity prices.
So what's the best way to be positioned here?
I think you need an element of defensiveness. My favorite sector right now is consumer staples. I think they, for the most part, not every company in that sector, but many have strong brands, strong pricing power. So if some of the input costs, freight cost pressures move higher, they can pass that through to their customers and still maintain good margins. And then I think commodities are going to be beneficiaries of inflation. So oil, which everybody hates for all kinds of reasons, it's been the best performing sector this year, and I think it continues to move higher. You look at where the energy sector in the S&P right now is about 2.8% of the index. If you go back to 2007, 2008, when the oil price was around the same level it is now, it was 11% of the S&P. So there's a long way to go back to where we've been historically on energy and its contribution to the global economy.
And so, Eddie, you are the chief investment officer for equity, but I want to hear how you factor in the bond market. If I think back to the beginning of this week, there was a lot of consternation about the fact that actually bond volatility, it's pretty high right now if you look at the MOVE index, especially compared to the VIX, which has basically been sleepwalking. I mean, what signal do you take from that?
It's always a little bit concerning when different asset classes are telling different stories. Particularly as an equity investor, we get concerned when high yield spreads widen out. You're not talking about that. You're talking about rates. But you know, you look at what's happened in Australia, where the front end of the curve has moved up significantly in the last month. And you say, you know, maybe the bond market is starting to get a whiff of higher rates, higher inflation. I'm still not convinced the long end of the curve has to move as high as everyone seems to think. I mean, most investors are convinced that the long end, long treasuries have to go higher if you've got inflation. But people have been making that call for 10 or 15 years, and it's been wrong. So I think you got to respect the market a little bit, and maybe you get inflation without the big move in government bond yields.
Okay, let's talk earnings, because we are in the midst of earnings season, and we are expecting certainly a slew of them after the Bell, Expedia, Airbnb, Uber, Peloton, Pinterest, Carvana, Live Nation, Novavax, and Square, just to name a few. What is the pattern that has emerged when it comes to equity, when it comes to earnings from the S&P 500 companies that we follow so closely?
It's been a good earnings season. After today, we'll probably be about 85% done in terms of the market cap that is reported. Most companies have beat. In the U.S., companies generally beat because they're very good at guiding conservatively so that they can beat. The interesting thing, though, is the reaction of the market has been a little more muted than in the past. So unless companies have beat on both earnings and revenues, they have they've generally underperformed on the day of their earnings report. So the market's been very strong over the past month while companies have been reporting, but the specific individual companies that, have reported have generally been met with at least a one-day underperformance, unless they've really blown numbers away.
Eddie, how do you feel about big tech right now? Because thinking about the earnings season ongoing, but I'm thinking about, you know, Apple, Amazon, disappointing on that front. It feels like it's been a tough go for the FANGs. How are you thinking about that group?
I think there are better opportunities in the market. I mean, those are all great companies, obviously, but they're so well represented in the S&P in terms of their market cap that they're, you know, every time people put money into an index fund, they're buying those stocks. I think, you know, some of them are somewhat expensive despite being great companies. I do think, you know, they are companies that have pricing power, have growth, and so they're good companies, but I think there's better opportunity elsewhere from a valuation perspective.
Eddie Perkin, we're going to have to leave it there. Chief Investment Officer for Equity at Eaton Vance, joining us on the phone from Boston. Eddie, thanks so much for taking the time and joining us on Bloomberg Business Week.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher-level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.